WaveAct, the web-free software company that understands what you want.
Hi everyone, welcome at WaveAct. Today with James Wu, who's the founder of several companies such as J-Square, Digital Finance Group, Matrix Exchange, and Ethereum Classic Labs. And today, as you might already guess, we will talk about VCs in blockchain and how to benefit during the crypto winter. First of all, thanks James for being here. It's really a pleasure talking with you. And starting out, I would like to give you the opportunity to tell us whatever you want, like what are you working on? How does your regular day look like? And yeah, feel free to drop any nuggets you want to.
Thank you, Kevin. Hello, everyone. This is James Wu from DFG and J-Square. So basically, we are a crypto investor in the industry for the past 7 years. I started DFG back to 2015. Unlike the other VCs, my family gave me a lot of support, so we don't raise any outside LPs. So it's 100% our own capital. It's more like a private company. So we invest into a bunch of startups first, including companies like Circle, LedgerX, Brave, SK and a few others, more like, because that 2015, 2016 is pretty early stage in crypto. So mostly we invest into different exchange and also the Bitcoin use cases. During the bull run of 2017 and afterward 2018, we start to invest more on the layer one side because we realize, there's so many applications built on Ethereum stuff from 2017. We realized that Bitcoin itself, only Bitcoin is not just enough. So we think the other layer one, is definitely have a room to grow in the future. So we decide to invest them. So we invest into a lot of great ones like in the early stage, like Polkadot, like Near, and a few others. We think these kind of infrastructure is very, very important to the crypto industry, so we definitely keep a close eye on the investment in whether that's a layer one protocol or other centralized solution providing infrastructure. The other part where we do investment is mobile applications. During the last bull run, we invest pretty diversified way in different sectors like DeFi, NFT, Metaverse, GameFi, and a few others. So overall speaking, DFG currently manage somewhere around $1 billion with all different kind of tokens and RPs. And there's another fund called J-Square, which is a very new fund established last year by myself and my friend and colleague, Joanna. So she was actually, in Huobi in the past few years. Then she joined DFG in 2019 and working for us, in the past three years. And last year she decided to leave and we started a new fund together called J-Square. That fund is slightly smaller, it's $150 million AUM, focused more on the early stage investment and the innovation applications. So that's where we are right now.
Wow, very interesting. You said you invested on the infrastructure side, mostly in L1s. What do you think, if I might ask it now, about layer 2s, rollups, and that kind of infrastructure? What's your opinion about that?
Yeah, I would say that's super important, right? So, for the infrastructure or the protocol side, scalability issue is really the key issue from the very beginning of the industry, right? So in 2017, during the bull run, people realized most of the application, to be honest, don't need that kind of really high TPS per second, but there's a certain amount of application definitely need that. So in 2017, we realized, Ethereum's quality, Bitcoin's quality. So we realized we have to solve the scalability issue, right? So in 2017, there's a bunch of ways about hard fork, right? You got a bunch of, Bitcoin hard fork and moving forward. And then we have other layer ones try to solve the Ethereum, scalability issues, right? But at least so far, these kind of hard fork solutions proved to be not working anymore. So during the last bull run, there's two kind of ways to solve the issue. The first is trying to build layer two solutions in their, you know, on a certain network. So that's definitely a very realistic way to solve the problem. The other is the other, you know, potential solutions that building a whole new ecosystem and trying to use a new solution to solve the problem, right? But at least so far, I guess, you know, Ethereum still dominate the market, have the most of the developer and project build on top of it. So definitely something, you know, Ethereum and plus layer two solution will be kind of the mainstream solution to solve the scalability issues in the near future. That's my prediction right now.
Okay, interesting. So from our investment standpoint, was there a particular reason why that's why you preferred alt L1s instead of let's say layer two solutions?
Yes, I think because the ones we invest in the layer ones, they are not just solving the scalability issues. They are more like, you know, for example, Polkadot. They are not just like solving this part of the problem. And there's other problem is about cross chain, right? So you have all these kind of protocol coexist together for the long time. Then you have to find out the cross chain solution, which is secure. With all the bridge being hacked during the last border run, it's almost proof that the bridge is the wrong business model. So it's not going to work. And you know, but finding out a solution like that, like Cosmos, Polkadot is definitely important for the question. So that's the other part of the question or problem in the protocol space that we invest. And Near is also the one we invest. It's also actually a different solution. It's about sharing, right? So you know, it's also different than what is exists right now. So that's the reason why, you know, I'm not saying solution like Avalanche and Solana, they don't have room to grow, which, you know, they do have a chance to succeed, but it would be very hard because they are trying to directly competing with Ethereum plus layer two. So basically, they are trying to solve the same problem. But speaking of like your other solution like Cosmos and Polkadot, they are working on a whole different kind of scope. So which means they are not directly competing with each other, which also, you know, have their own potential to grow in the future because they are definitely solving the different problem.
Hey, fully agree. It's always better to not directly compete with, let's say, a company or at least a solution that's already out there in the market and widely used, because you always need to be much, much better to actually overcome that barrier and, you know, grow past that. Well, that's super interesting. Thanks for these insights, James. As you mentioned before, we had now several bear markets in crypto. I would also state now that we have now, due to the macroeconomic situation, plus all that, what happened in the last couple of months or last year, one of the more, let's say, harsh crypto winters. But please disagree with me if that's not the case. How would you define it to someone who has never heard of it, just to get everyone on the same page in the very beginning, and then we will dive deeper into it?
No, Kevin, I think I totally agree with you. It's the worst probably bear market. You know, I have, you know, go through this. This is my third bear market in the crypto space. This is probably the worst because it really caused huge problems in the industry. You know, you see all the collapse of FTX, UAC, Terra. They are causing definite negative impact on the retail investor and also the institutional investor. People are being more cautious these days because you know these kind of solutions. I mean, they are being too. I mean, I would say they are overvalued during the bull market because, you know, they have, you know, kind of trying to use leverage or like there's for Terra, they have small supply, then push the valuation to very, very high, then create a bubble for that. And then, you know, once their business, you know, and then business model itself cannot last for long, right? So if you over leverage for the investor, or if you are creating 20% yield for US dollar, that's not going to last long for. And if you're moving people's money, for example, like FTX, that's not going to last, end up doing well. So this is probably the worst. It's causing really big problems. But I think so far, during the bear market, I think we see more like a chance than you know, we see more chance in the bear market. Because right now in the last two bull market, we don't bull market and bear market. We see all the kind of, you know, the application is very, very simple. It's just like a certain day, and then you build a bunch of DApp on top of that. That's 2017. In 2013, that's even easier, just Bitcoin. So it, right now we got very, very complicated or diversified kind of crypto market with all the people participating in that, you know, during the last quarter, right? You basically have all the industry like DeFi, GameFi, Metaverse, that's reached out to the every part of the traditional industry, right? In the financial system, in the gaming industry, in all of that. So everyone starts to know about the crypto industry. And a lot of people are actually participating in the crypto industry. So probably like 4-5% of people are on Bitcoin or crypto so far. So I guess, you know, for the next bull run, then we will have, it could be the, I mean, could be the last chance for us to really get into Bitcoin or Ethereum in a very, very cheap price. And for the next bull run, then we'll have billions of people kind of holding crypto. Then that's it, right? It's pretty much like the internet. And, you know, so that's why I think bear market so far is actually, with also the overall, you know, policy being slightly aggressive, I would say the Federal Reserve being slightly aggressive and push the price to lower. So I think that's actually a good opportunity for the investor, whether institutional investor or retail investor, to buy Bitcoin, to buy Ether, to get a chance to move into the crypto industry in a very low price. So that's even a more like a chance than you know, worry too much about it.
Yeah, fully agree with that. And you just talked about FTX and basically also the investment industry, the funding industry. How do you think, or what's your, let's say, viewpoint on how VCs in China have been impacted by all of this?
Sure, I think it would be largely impact. You know, several VCs, they have exposure to the FTX, that's direct impact, and that's the first. The second is really a lot of VCs follow the investment of FTX. They invest heavily into Solana ecosystem. They take a really big setback. And even if you have zero exposure to Solana ecosystem, you have zero exposure to FTX, people like us, like we don't have exposure to that. And we do invest into Solana project, but that's really 2-3 of them, very small ticket size. But we also be impacted because the price of the market goes down, right? So we indirectly also being impacted by the FTX situation. So I think VC right now is being very, very cautious. People like us, like, you know, we invest into probably 2 projects a week in the ballroom. Right now, we invest into probably 1-2 projects at most, probably a month in the bear market. Because we've been more cautious. Why should I do all this kind of investment? And most of them are very, very risky, right? But on the other hand, we're seeing we are being more aggressive because we're trying to write much bigger ticket size and trying to get more involvement in this kind of project. Because in the bull market, there's not a lot of room for negotiation. Then, you know, whatever, you know, if it's a good project, then we are asking for allocation, then we get in. There's not a lot of room for negotiation. Right now, we can negotiate for a better term, and we can probably, you know, selecting the project we want to invest. Now, in the bull run, maybe investing into some project with product with a pretty valuation, we also invest. But right now, we are definitely not going to do that. We will see the product, see the team, and see why I should invest in you guys, right? So it's actually a better, if VCs still have money or still have a lot of money or part of the money on their balance sheet, it's actually a good time for them to get into this project with a better term if they can make good selections.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of selections, that was really interesting. Now, how would you, besides the team and what you just said, actually select a good company to invest in? What are some of your criteria, for example?
Yeah, I think if we calculate the, you know, all the projects we invested for, the ones gave us the real return or really the meaningful return is the ones who building for the long term, right? For example, we invested in LedgerX in 2017, we cashed out and sold that to FTX last year with not crazy return, but still very, very good kind of return for us. Because, I mean, these guys are building the product for the long term. And also for Polkadot as well, we invested in 2019, 2020, and Gavin Wood and his team also building this for the long term, right? So it's actually, you know, it's actually good to take a strategy to selecting the builders which can insist on working on the project for the long term. So I saw there's a few kind of builders, they're trying to kind of start multi-project at the same time, or shifting the project quickly. If this one fails, they're moving to other industry, moving to other ecosystem, then starting a new project. That's not going to work well in the long term. So that's one important factor when we decide to select a project when we invest.
Okay, that's interesting. Speaking of somewhat personalities of founders, right? Thinking long term or being in for the long term. Are there some other traits that you are looking for in founders?
Yes, I mean the track record is definitely important, right? So, and you know, this is something you can track. If this guy already has done something like this, then definitely don't invest into them. The second is really about their personality and about, you know, whether this guy is down to earth and keep you know, doing the business. I don't like the guys who's being very, you know, very crazy or noisy on Twitter. I don't think that's a good thing. You know, 3ACs, Terra, you know, SBF, these guys are all crazy and very kind of active and noisy on Twitter, and they all fail, right? So, I mean, Vitalik does post some kind of articles, but it's very tech oriented. You know, Gavin would never, almost like barely use Twitter. You know, we I mean, I'm not saying using Twitter is a bad thing, but what I'm trying to explain here is like trying to probably do more things down to earth instead of just do a lot of marketing stuff and trying to you know, trying to let, you know, do crazy marketing stuff, let other people know about it. It's actually probably a better strategy for the project in the long term, and also for example, and it will add a lot of chance for us to invest.
Interesting. Do you mean because the focus shift from actually building goes towards marketing, or what are your thought models behind that? Or is it more the mindset?
Yeah, what I'm saying is trying to, you know, because usually if you do over marketing, then you it first costs you a lot of money, right? You know, the second is really probably, you know, people will know about it, then it's probably overvalued because you are doing over marketing, right? So if you, from a purely investment perspective, you want to select something is undervalued, right? Something is not doing marketing, then, but the product is very solid because eventually people will use it, people will get it, right? So I think, you know, especially in the crypto space, it's very noisy. You know, you will see all kind of things. A lot of people don't even know much about it, and they heard of like, okay, SBF buying Solana, I'm buying Solana at $200, then you lose a lot of money, right? So that's the situation here. So for investment perspective, I really suggest people to be very cautious and dig into further about technology product first. And if it's a layer one infrastructure, dig into technology more. If it's applications or whatever, DApps or whatever, then dig into the product more and see whether that have value instead of just buying. You know, I heard of them, they are big name, big brand, and going to invest. I think that's definitely the wrong strategy here.
Okay, so basically that's something projects shouldn't do, from my understanding, at least for from your investment perspective. Are there some other, let's say, red flags or things that you are you would not invest into if you see that in a founder or in a project? Some don't do's?
Yeah. I think multitask is definitely what I mentioned before. The second is really still, I mean, it depends on a bad track record, right? So if the guys who is trying to, you know, in the privacy, they're trying to blow off their investor or people who buy the token on the secondary market or whatever. I mean, that's not a good thing. I heard some of the project, they are very tricky things. I mean, they are still, I mean, most of them are good, but few of them, you know, they're trying to prove very tricky things. They are a lot invested in, for example, investing to LT, but didn't give the investor the tokens or something like that. That's pretty bad. You know, these kind of things we are definitely going to avoid or trying to say this is a red flag. You know, the other things, I mean, we are keeping it more flexible. You know, as long as you are a good team building the real product, which have a, you know, angle to move in the industry, then we would definitely consider it.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, thank you for being so open about that. That's usually something you tend to not share because, you know. Okay. Is there something, to put it a little bit, to change the perspective now, to back to the VC itself, when negotiating terms, which is, as you mentioned, now easier in bear markets, are there some, I know that goes into detail right now, but are there some terms that you try to get into a deal right now to secure or reduce the risk of your investment?
Yeah, I think that's the, you know, about negotiating the term, there's two things. The first is the amount they raise, the second is valuation, right? So, I mean, for the valuation perspective, it's definitely being much more reasonable right now. And for the, you know, but we also care a lot about the amount they raise, because cash flow is super important in the bear market. Nobody knows how long will the bear market. I mean, I predict next year we will have a very better overall environment, but nobody knows. Maybe next year is still the bear market, right? Then you have to prepare at least probably 2 years of runways to make sure the project survives, right? So, of course, I mean, for the previous project we invest, some of them are really decent projects, but they are short of cash. We'll definitely give them some support and also introduce some to them to other good VCs to give some support. That's definitely something you want to save and make sure they survive in the crypto windows. The other thing is really about with new investment, we'll be more cautious. We invest into more on the mainstream kind of project, and because that gives us more safety and certainty that, you know, they are not going to, you know, die in the bear market, since they are, you know, they are big enough and we invest into a lot of money, then they will definitely survive. For the small projects, a small project, you know, we are also asking them to, you can dilute in a little bit more, but you're gonna make sure you have enough cash to survive the crypto window. Otherwise, it's very, very risky for VC to invest.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. James, do you maybe have, let's say, three key takeaways for either founders or VCs watching this that would maybe summarize the whole podcast right now? Or let's say some of the most important aspects of it.
Yeah, sure. The first is definitely, you know, I would say the first is own your private key. And being self-custody, and that's probably the number one important thing. Otherwise, you know, I'm not saying all the centralized platforms are bad, but it's still riskier, right? It's not your key, not your money. The second is really about doing due diligence by yourself, and it's really important about not following these kind of big name. I don't like that strategy, you know. For example, doesn't mean like the big brand have good returns, you know, and also, you know, we can see all these kind of big players fail in the market. So definitely do your own research, do your own due diligence instead of following others. The last I would say is be more brave, you know, in the bear markets, because I feel like people being, you know, too aggressive in the bull market and too cautious in the bear market. So for the people who being too cautious, just be more brave in the bear market. You know, since we're turnover in the next few years, we still have a very bright future for the crypto industry.
Love it. Hey, thanks, James. From my point of view, I learned a lot. Thank you for coming on to this show. And I would say, anything else you want to drop here about your company, about your projects, please feel free to do so. Otherwise, I will put all of James' links into the video description. And yeah, would say thank you for being here. And yeah, talk soon.
Yeah. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you.
Wave Act, the web-free software company that understands what you want.